This is a special edition of Macro Voices with hedge fund manager Eric Townsend, the premier financial podcast targeting professional finance, high net worth individuals, family offices, and other sophisticated investors. Now, for this special edition of Macro Voices, here's hedge fund manager Eric Townsend.
Macro Voices All-Stars, episode number 20, was recorded on June 17th, 2019. I'm Eric Townsend. All-Star Louis Vincent Gav from GavCal Capital is back with us today. This episode of Macro Voices All-Stars is brought to you by TopTradersUnplugged.com, the leading podcast for systematic trading and investing. They're even offering Macro Voices listeners a free book. I'll tell you how to claim it at the end of this episode. Louis, you're speaking to us from Hong Kong today. Now, you and I, both being Hong Kong residents, are very familiar with the situation there, but some of our listeners are probably not filled in on everything that's going on. So what is the extradition bill about? Why is it causing these massive protests in Hong Kong, and what should we expect next, and how does it all feed back into the global economy?
Oh, man, we could talk about that all day. First, thanks a lot for having me. Great to catch up with you, Eric. The story of Hong Kong, you know, where else in the world would you have 2 million people in the street? And the reason you have 2 million people in the street, which is, you know, more than a quarter of the Hong Kong population, is pretty simple. You have 2 million people in the street because you have 2 million people who really don't want to change the status quo. Hong Kong has its own judicial system, its own police, its own currency, basically a special deal within China. It's within the one country, two system. And the Hong Kong government, Carrie Lam, the chief executive of Hong Kong, proposed a change whereby you would have a new extradition treaty that would allow people to be basically extradited to China to face justice in China rather than face justice in Hong Kong if they ever committed a crime in China. Now, obviously, this was sold to the Hong Kong population as, you know, all we'll do is send away, you know, murderers and rapists and the wretches of societies. But, you know, nobody trusts that before you know it, you wouldn't have some political dissidents that wouldn't get caught up in the net. And or even, frankly, businessmen who, instead of facing a court in Hong Kong, would have to face a court in China. And so, you know, this basically disturbed the status quo. And before you know it, first you had 100,000 people on the street, then a million, and yesterday, 2 million. Fortunately, Carrie Lam backed down. And so now Hong Kong's judicial independence should be maintained, which is obviously good news for all of us who live here.
What do you think? You know, the treaty supposedly says that you and I and everyone else who is a resident of Hong Kong should enjoy this two-system government condition all the way to 2049, which is when the treaty allows China to ultimately take over Hong Kong and annex it completely. Until then, in theory, we're guaranteed a separate democratic system. You think we're going to make it to 2049?
I actually think it's 2047 because it's 50 years after 1997. But that's a long time. I think when the treaty was made, the general feeling, the general belief was that by 2047, you know, China will have evolved and probably taken on a lot of the accoutrements of a modern democracy. So the treaty was made in 1984, and Hong Kong was given back to the Chinese in 1997. And, you know, from 1984 to 1997, it seemed like that the trajectory was a fairly optimistic one, right? China was getting freer economically. And the general assumption was that following economic freedoms, you'd get civic and political freedoms at the back end. This is what you'd seen in Taiwan, which had evolved from being a totalitarian, authoritarian state to a full-fledged democracy, and what you'd also seen in South Korea. And so I think hopes were running high that, you know, you'd see the same trajectory in China. And I think up until 5-6 years ago, you could still very much believe that. You know, I think that the era of Xi Jinping has changed a lot of people's perspectives. Instead of moving towards more democracy, it seems that at least when it comes to civic freedoms, maybe not economic freedoms, but at least when it comes to civic freedoms, things are going the wrong way. You've had, you know, up to a million supposedly Uyghurs in Western China put into re-education camps. You've had, you know, all this new system of social points that increasingly feels like Big Brother's watching you all the time. And so rather than a move towards again, more civic and political freedom, it does feel like China's going the other way. I wouldn't want to make a bet as to what the situation looks like in 2047, though. That's still quite a few years from now. The bottom line, however, is that the Hong Kong people have shown that they won't let their own rights be trampled over. And the most likely conclusion of this is that from now on, I think people are going to be very careful about proposing any laws that take away any of the rights of Hong Kong, lest you end up with another million people in the street.
Louis, let's stay on the topic of China, because earlier this week, we had Juliette Duclerc on Macro Voices All-Stars, and she reminded us, as she described it, she said, China has one potential last card to play, its own weapon of mass global inflation destruction, and that is, in Juliette's eyes, to devalue the yuan. I think you've written quite a bit about this, and you may actually see the other direction for the yuan. So what are the trade-offs here? Why would China potentially devalue the yuan, and why might they instead allow it to appreciate?
Yeah, no, I feel on this, I must say I feel differently from Juliette. In fact, I did write a book recently about this. I wrote a book called Clash of Empires that was published a couple months ago. And look, my starting point is, do you think that what you're seeing between China and the U.S. is a trade war, as the media generally portrays it, or is it the start of a new Cold War? And I think the answer to this question will then kind of drive the answers to everything that follows. If you think it is a trade war, then indeed a devaluation from China might make sense. My view is I think it's a Cold War. I think it's a new Cold War, or at the very least, I think that that's how China now sees it. If you're sitting in Beijing and you see, you know, Mike Pence's speech at the Hudson Institute, if you see the attacks on Huawei, the attacks on ZTE over the past year, you know, you basically conclude, hold on, the U.S. isn't trying to fix this proportionate trade deficit here. What the U.S. is trying to do is basically keep us in the box, make sure that we don't, you know, leapfrog the U.S. technologically, make sure that, you know, we don't roll out the empire that we intend to roll out through the One Belt, One Road and so forth. In short, if you're China, I think at this point you feel the U.S. is out to get me. Now, this may or may not be true, but, you know, it's the old joke, right? If it's not because you're paranoid that people aren't out to get you. If you're Chinese policymakers, you can hope for the best and you can hope that, you know, you do cut a deal with President Trump and that everything works out to be fine. But I think you have to plan for the worst. And planning for the worst means basically tackling your three major weakness points. And if you're China, you have three major weakness points. The first is technology. And frankly, the U.S. has already, you know, played that card. Few people realize this, but China actually imports more semiconductors than it imports oil. Last year, it imported for about $270 billion worth of foreign semiconductors, a lot of which came from the U.S. or at least on U.S. patents. The second big weakness for China is oil. Last year, China imported $170 billion worth of oil. And the third and possibly most important weakness is China's reliance on the U.S. dollar. You know, most of China's trade is dependent on the U.S. dollar still. You know, 10 years after the global financial crisis, and really 6 years after China started to internationalize the renminbi in earnest, still to this day, almost, you know, a massive majority of China's trade still takes place in dollars. Now, we've seen in recent years, the U.S. have no qualms whatsoever about weaponizing the U.S. dollar. They've done it with Iran. They've done it with Venezuela. And each time they weaponize the dollar, they basically bring the economy that they want to cut off from the U.S. dollar system to its knees. If you're a Chinese policymaker today, that's what you have to worry about. You have to worry about the U.S. cutting you off the supply of semiconductors. So you pour money into building your own semiconductor industry. That's what China is doing today. You have to worry that the U.S. will try to cut you off oil. So you cut as many deals with Russia as you possibly can. And if you look at the past 6 years, President Xi Jinping has met with President Putin 30 different times, including this last weekend. And to your question, I'm sorry, it's a long-winded answer. The most important part is cutting the dependency on the U.S. dollar. Now, on this, I think the reaction of the markets on May 5th and the reaction of Chinese policymakers was very telling. You know, President Trump on May 5th basically sends his tweets saying no deal with China and basically going to rake China over the coals. The immediate reaction of the market is to sell the renminbi because the view of the market is, well, that means bad growth for China. That means China will have to stimulate more. That means China will have to pile debt, more bad debt onto bad debt. And so the renminbi weakens. So far, so good. It makes sense. Except that literally within 48 hours, Chinese policymakers come out and say, hey, if you short the renminbi, you're going to burn your fingers. And in essence, we're putting a floor on this thing at 7. I mean, they don't say it, but they imply it very strongly. And from there, shortly thereafter, President Xi comes out and gives a speech at the start of where the Long March took place. So the Long March is one of these founding myths of the Chinese Communist Party. Well, it's not a myth. It's a true story of the Chinese Communist Party where they were being hounded by the nationalist forces. They regrouped in southern China and basically walked all the way up to the northwest of China, where they basically lost 70% of their men along the way, were hounded by nationalist forces. And it was a sort of, you know, a tactical retreat that was extremely painful. And so Xi Jinping goes to the start of the Long March and basically makes a sort of blood, sweat, and tears Churchillian speech explaining, well, you know, the next few quarters of growth are going to suck, but we're going to suck it up and we're going to do our own Long March. Now, needless to say, the stock market doesn't like it. The stock market isn't in for Long March. Stock market likes pleasant strolls, not long marches. But what President Xi was saying is, look, we are not going to basically devalue our way to growth, and we're not going to stimulate needlessly our way to growth, piling bad debt onto bad debt. Why? Well, the answer is pretty simple, because if we do, it's going to devalue the currency, and it's going to undermine our efforts to internationalize the renminbi. It's going to undermine our efforts to reduce our dependency on the dollar. Because the fundamental fact remains that if you're China today, you're at a crossroad. Yes, you can devalue and give yourself a little shot in the arm. But if you do, you've cut the credibility of your own currency. And down the road, you end up even more dependent on the US dollar than you've ever been. If you're a Chinese policymaker today, the imperative has to be to cut the dependency on the US dollar. And to cut your dependency on the US dollar, there's only one way to do it, and that's by having a strong currency.
Louis, before we let you go this week, tell us a little bit more about your new book, Clash of Empires. What's it about and where can people find it?
Well, they can find it on Amazon. That's the easiest place to find it, or on our own website at gafgal.com. The book is called Clash of Empires, so I guess it says a lot in the title just there. The general idea was I wrote a book back in 2004 called Our Brave New World, which, you know, went into globalization and how supply lines would be increasingly integrated and how, you know, valuable companies would focus on design and sale and how, as a result, intellectual property would become ever more valuable, etc. This is sort of the antithesis of this book. This book, 15 years later, basically goes in how the world is now breaking apart into three separate economic zones, each with their own supply line, each with their own reference currency, each with their own reference bond market, each with their own reserve currency. And these three zones are obviously euro, renminbi, US dollar. And as the world breaks apart into these three zones from the globalized world that we see, I think that the investment consequences are going to be massive. And in that respect, you know, in recent months, I've been going around meeting with clients, talking about the book mostly. And, you know, I ask every client, hey, do you believe that globalization was one of the most important macro trends of the past couple of decades? And by and large, clients say, oh, yeah, absolutely. Then I say, okay, do you believe globalization is coming to an end? And, you know, pretty much every client says, yep, it definitely looks that way. And then I ask, okay, so what are you doing about it in your portfolio? And every client says, oh, so far, nothing. And I think that's where we stand right now. The view is, yep, globalization is coming to an end, but nobody's adjusted their portfolio for it. And the point of the book is to look at potential portfolio consequences of this, what I think is a massive change.
Well, it sounds like a book not to be missed if you are going to have an investment portfolio in this modern world that we come into. Well, Louis, we look forward to getting you back in a month or so for another update on All Stars. Meanwhile, today's All Stars episode was made possible by TopTradersUnplugged.com. If you want a different perspective on how to invest in today's markets without emotions and without predictions, go to TopTradersUnplugged.com/macro, where you can claim a free book about a highly dependable and consistent, yet frequently overlooked investment strategy. Check them out. You'll be glad you did. For the Macro Voices Podcast Network, I'm Eric Townsend.
That concludes this edition of Macro Voices. Be sure to tune in each week to hear feature interviews with the brightest minds in finance and macroeconomics. Please register your free account at macrovoices.com. Once registered, you'll receive our free weekly Research Roundup email containing links to supporting documents from our featured guests and the very best free financial content our volunteer research team could find on the internet each week. You'll also gain access to our free research library. And the more registered users we have, the more we'll be able to recruit high-profile feature interview guests for future programs. So please register your free account today at macrovoices.com if you haven't already. You can subscribe to Macro Voices on iTunes to have Macro Voices automatically delivered to your mobile device each week free of charge. Macro Voices is presented for informational and entertainment purposes only. The information presented on Macro Voices should not be construed as investment advice. Always consult a licensed investment professional before making investment decisions. The views and opinions expressed on Macro Voices are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect those of the show's hosts or sponsors. Macro Voices, its producers, sponsors, and hosts, Eric Townsend, shall not be liable for losses resulting from investment decisions based on information or viewpoints presented on Macro Voices.